Support for podcasting on KBIA comes from Grindstone Fitness Studio, a full-service gym offering equipment for traditional exercise like weight and cardiovascular training, as well as specialized classes. Choices include personal training, spinning, yoga, Pilates, and more. All classes taught by certified professionals. More information is available at 443-4447, Grindstone Fitness Studio, 3005 Chinaberry Drive in Columbia.
This episode of Intersection is a rebroadcast. The program originally aired on April 15th, 2013.
From KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute, on air and online, this is Intersection.
Hello and welcome to Intersection, where people and ideas meet online and on KBIA. I'm Ryan Famuliner. Next month, students throughout Columbia will don caps and gowns and receive their high school diplomas. But not every student will make it to graduation. Estimates place Columbia's dropout rate at about 3% in 2011, which is close to the state average. Nationally, the U.S. Department of Education places the dropout rate at around 3.4% for that school year ending in 2010. So what's being done to reduce these numbers here in Columbia and around the state? Today on Intersection, we'll explore some of the reasons that students drop out of high school and find out what's being done in our community to try to change that. Joining me in studio is Erica Neville. She's the principal at Douglas High School. She's held that position since 2011. Welcome to the show, Erica.
Thank you.
And Lorenzo Lawson is the executive director of the Youth Empowerment Zone. That group works with at-risk youth and helps them transition into adulthood. Thanks for being here, Lorenzo.
Thank you for inviting me.
All right, thanks. And we hope to hear you from you in the audience as well. What do you think, why do you think kids are dropping out? Share your thoughts. You can give us a call at 573-8255.
This episode of Intersection is a rebroadcast. Our phone lines are now closed.
You can also tweet us at IntersectKBIA, or you can join our online chat. And this is a very complex question, but I still want to just start there just to start. What are some of the reasons you guys are seeing kids drop out of school in Columbia right now? Is it a matter of poor performance, or what are some of the issues that you guys are seeing at the moment in Columbia?
I think Erica probably could answer that better since she's directly working with the school system.
Right. I think it is the issue is complex to begin with, and I think it's a host of issues centered around students. Poverty has a lot to do with it. Life circumstance. And I really don't know where to begin. It depends on how you want to measure,
sure,
or what you want to focus on. But it's usually the holistic child isn't being nurtured to the point where they can go back and think about school. It's not just a matter of, oh, I don't want to go to school anymore and I'm done. It is a holistic, community-based issue, because all of our children belong to us, if that makes any sense.
Sure. And Lorenzo, I see you nodding there.
Well, you was quoting out that we're right around 3% dropout rate. And my whole focus would be how much of that 3%, what race makes up.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look into that, I think it would be safe to say that at least maybe 75% of that that 3% is African American, and probably higher for African American males. So as Erica was saying, that poverty make up a lot of the reason why. Also, I think that culture makes become a big factor on why a lot of these kids are dropping out. At the Youth Empowerment Zone, we work with them and we ask them that question, you know. And a lot of times, some of the answers, one of the biggest answers or the most frequent answer is they don't understand me.
Mm-hmm.
And that just lead me to believe that there is a cultural disconnect in the public school system in whole. A lot of these young people that have dropped out said that they felt like they wasn't wanted in the school system, mm-hmm. that they were actually being forced out of the school system. A lot of them conveyed to me that they were referred to the juvenile justice system because of behaviors, of course. And so I, as Erica alluded to, it's a multiplex a problem, and the answer is that have been eluding us because it haven't gotten any better.
Sure. And I do have some of those numbers. Oh, so go ahead, Erica.
Okay. Yeah, so when we go back and we look at the thing that strikes me working at Douglas and working with our students is a lack of wraparound from all adults in the community. And I think that's a piece of it that we really need to go back and do the ownership on. Mm-hmm. And when I say it's a community-based issue, because we need the community, we need adults to go back in and reinvest in the lives of our young people. And I think one of the things that happens with schools is that we are the institution that has the measures and the accountability on paper, legislation at the state, at the local, the state, and the national level. We're the people you can peg. So I'm not denying that culture has a piece of this.
Sure.
And it's not just, it is a big cultural question. It's a big C question. But it's an adult and a neighborhood who is watching and working with and investing in the lives of our young people. And how does education fit into everybody's goal set when we have that conversation? I work with juvenile justice quite a bit and DYS and other institutions that come in, but we have to go back and ask, well, how do we rethink this critical and this educationally fragile group of kids? How do we rethink how we wrap our services around them?
Right. And I just want to throw out, Lorenzo, because you mentioned those numbers earlier. I don't have that specific number of how many dropouts are minorities, but I do have 9% in 2012 of Black students in Columbia. The dropout rate was 9% among Black students, only 2.75% amongst white students, 3% amongst Hispanics. So I just want to throw that out there. But I guess, Erica, the point you got on there is great, the community change. But how do you really make that happen, not just inside the school system, but outside as well in the community? What kind of things can you do to try to foster that change? And what opportunities are there? If someone wants to make a difference, what can they do to make some sort of community change? It's a big thing, right?
It's a mindset shift. And it's of how do we go back in and work with community agencies? How do we work with other organizations that have adults that need or desire to do that community service piece? How do we go back in and fill in the gaps that will help make a student proficient academically and get them the skill set that will make them marketable in the 21st century? And from my vantage point, I see that in collaboration and working with as many agencies and all hands on deck as possible. I'm held accountable to the educational statistics, regardless of how those students got there. And regardless of how big their holes and their gaps are. So we work with how do you bring in the rest of that and fend off the other people? It's a very interesting and tenuous situation, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
But we look at community agencies. We work with Lorenzo and YEZ. We have a wonderful mentoring project started up with the Rotarians and all five Rotarian chapters in town right now. We are working with MU and doing some initiatives with them to go back and get more educators or new educators in the system. Working in our school, we work with MU's education school, and we're also working with Columbia College. We just penned a new deal with them last year. And plus our partners in education. Mm-hmm. We work with the district. Columbia Tribune and Harry S. Truman VA Hospital have been long-term partners, working with Job Point and CARE, but connecting with as many services as possible. At the end, I see the data, I see all of that good stuff,
mm-hmm.
but what I want for the students that I work with is what I think we all want for children, is that we want them to have the skill set that makes them healthy as possible, because, you know, we're all a little healthy
right.
individuals that are able to sustain themselves with a livable wage in a respectful and a respectable manner.
I do want to take 1 second to remind our listeners that this is a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuel, and you're listening to Intersection. Today, we're talking about graduation rates in Columbia and what's being done to help students who are at risk of dropping out. Joining me in studio are Erica Neville, the principal at Douglas High School, and Lorenzo Lawson, executive director of the Youth Empowerment Zone, which works with at-risk youth as they make the transition into adulthood. We'd love to hear from you in our audience. Do you know someone that's dropped out of high school? What led to that decision? Give us a call at 573-882.
This episode of Intersection is a rebroadcast. Our phone lines are now closed.
You can also tweet us at IntersectKBIA. We'd like to remind you that Intersection is presented as streaming video during our live conversations every Monday afternoon at 2, online at KBIA.org. You can watch that video and join our online chat by going to KBIA.org and scrolling down to the link for Intersection. Again, that's Mondays at 2, online at KBIA.org. And so, Lorenzo, I wanted to throw, I do have a little bit more numbers. I'll try to avoid them because I want to talk more about what's going on here on the ground floor. But we did the 2012 High School Dropouts in America survey identified some groups of students that had issues with dropouts, like ask dropouts, what made you drop out? Mm-hmm. And some of the most common ones going one down were absence of parental support or encouragement, becoming a parent themselves, lacking the credits needed to graduate, missing too many days of school, or failing or being uninterested in classes. Are those common problems that you see with students that you're working with in your program? And Erica, I might want you to maybe talk about those populations.
Sure, that's common to poverty. Mm-hmm. A lot of those are symptoms of poverty. And plus, I applaud what Erica is doing at Douglas. But I do want to say this, that's exception. That hadn't been the rule. She's doing a great job, and I'm quite sure we're going to see some better results from what she's doing. But it hasn't always been that type of partnership with community, with the Columbia Public School System. It just recently beginning to, and she is absolutely right. It's going to take the community. I am a product of Douglas School. When Douglas was not integrated, I'm kind of aging myself, but it was a community mindset that education was a high priority. In fact, educators was the leaders of our community. It was preachers and educators. Those were the people that we looked up to, that we honored, that we respect. And the educators at that particular time took a vested interest in the students to the point where they did reach out to the community. They would come by the households and talk about the problems of the kids. I know that we're growing into a larger, more urban type of setting community where that's kind of unheard of, but I don't think that should be something that's thrown off of the game plan, because it is going to take the community. As Erica said, you know, we need to get the community involved in the education of our children, because, you know, for the old cliche, they are our future. Mm-hmm. And what are we raising up, you know? Not only that, as a taxpayer, that's putting a big dent into our tax dollars, because it takes a whole lot less to educate them than to incarcerate them.
Sure.
And there's a connect between those who drop out and the high number of people who are going into the penal institution and the incarceration rate. There's a direct correlation between those.
Right. And well, so if you mentioned that you think Douglas is the exception, so what do you think is the rule? What do you think that people are usually doing now with a student that might be at risk of dropping out in the community? What do you think is happening now that is different than what's happening, maybe happening?
Well, in the past, and not so long ago, it was, like I said, and I've been meeting with the Juvenile Justice Center, and we are coming up with creative ways of stopping the public school system from repairing them into that system. Mm-hmm. Because what have been happening in the past is if they can't deal with them, then they are just refer them to the juvenile justice system, and then they're out of my hands. Or just kick them out. Then they're out of my hands.
Right.
So we had a tendency of not, excuse me, really wanting to deal with the issues of why they were behaving like this. What can we do to stop these type of behaviors? As Erica said, you know, the public school system wasn't reaching out to a youth empowerment zone and say, what can you do to help us? It was like, we are an institution of our own. We don't need no help. It ain't our problem. It's their problem, and we're getting rid of this problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I have seen it, and that's how it have been. Recently, and I give Dr. Belcher credit, too. He's been meeting with us and trying to come up with innovative ideas of how we can prevent some of these things. What can we do to come together and help turn our students around?
Okay.
And can we go back to your list?
Yeah, sure. You want me to read it back? Or yeah, go ahead.
Because one of the things that I need to assert, intellectual capital is not my students' issue.
Okay.
They are smart.
And one of them was uninterested in classes, too, was one of them. That kind of gets to the point, maybe, what you're talking about there.
We're going to go back. Numbers 1 and 4. It was the absence of parental support.
And missing too many days of school.
Those are I would like to go back in and quantify. It's not necessarily absence. Mm-hmm. It is our parents, due to whatever our economic issues have been over the last 5 to 7 years, 5 to 10, are already drained. So absence makes it seem as though that they don't care. That is not so. If you want to believe how much our families care about education, go and see the celebrations that take place in fifth grade graduation or any other academic celebrations that these kids get to be a part of. There is cheering, there is yelling, there is great enthusiasm for educational achievement. Now, the issue is that in the 21st century, we've changed the game. We've changed the expectations, and there's a whole nother lesson and conversation about the global economics and the global economy and what we need to be as Americans and American students in order to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
But the enthusiasm is there. The translation into practice is what is missing. Social capital, if you will. How do we play school? How do we play the game of school? That's the disconnect piece that our students don't get. That is the lack of engagement piece. How do we play school? Right now, our kids have and they own technologies that we did not have. I'm going to date myself now. I remember the first computer that I went to go see was as big as this room. And I can hold it's in my pocket now
right.
on an iPhone, and it's more powerful. So how do we go back and re-engage kids that get to go back in and, unlike other parents in different social classes, may have access to sports and other activities that they can go back in and channel their students' energy that they have to. The kids that we're talking about working with, they get to go back and find their entertainment on their own. So how do we take that? Kids that have more freedom at a younger age due to life circumstances, good, bad, or ugly, I'm not here to judge, it is what it is, and rechannel that in a place that is a pretty structured institution that, for better or worse, we haven't really changed much since the inception of public schools and make them fit. It's like a round peg in a square hole. So when Dear Bishop comes and talks to me about what we do at Douglas, we think, like, I joke with my staff. I have just the best staff in the city right now, in the state. I joke with our staff. Our staff is our Douglas students, so they are round peg square holes. How do we wrap our services around them? Because we come to them where they are with our expertise. So that's part of the deal. But the big deal is, how do we go back in and reengage these different populations that are so different? How do we help them to intersect and work together so that we can get the ultimate goal educationally, which is to get our kids, more kids graduating and more kids out of our system?
Mm-hmm.
We have to both give. We can't expect just the kids to do it.
We'll take one more moment to remind our listeners that this is a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and you're listening to Intersection. Today, we're talking about graduation rates in Columbia and what's being done to help students who are at risk of dropping out. Joining me in studio are Erica Neville, the principal at Douglas High School, and Lorenzo Lawson, executive director in the Youth Empowerment Zone, which works with at-risk youth as they make the transition into adulthood. For you and our audience, what do you think should be done to keep kids in school? Share your suggestions. Give us a call at 573-882-9255.
This episode of Intersection is a rebroadcast. Our phone lines are now closed.
So tweet us at IntersectKBIA. Well, and then I guess I'll just follow up on that, Erica. What are you've been at Douglas now for about 2 years, and I know you made some changes there, some staff changes. You've had some. You're talking about bringing in sports programs that haven't been there before. What are some of the other changes you guys you've been making while you've been there to try, you know, because, again, it's a big issue that people talk about in higher education and everything like that. But on the ground level, what can you do? What kind of small things are you doing there at Douglas to try to make a difference with these students?
And it's not a measurable outcome
sure.
yet.
Sure.
what we need our students to see is that our K through 12 education in the 21st century is not the end. Mm-hmm. That is the beginning. So if you look at this year's graduating class, we have students that are now talking about, we had FAFSA, which makes sense to us, is a word on the lips of our students, that we are making sure that as our students graduate, we're also connecting them to a post-secondary plan that gives them the opportunity to move on, which is giving our other students the opportunity to say, oh, it's not just high school, and a lot of our students are doing this in the midst of surviving themselves. We don't really have a good handle on the number of homeless students or homelessness in Columbia.
Yes.
And so let's back. We're looking at Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Let's talk about physiological needs. We have more students accessing the food bank and food pantry than ever in Columbia, Missouri mm-hmm. right now. Shelter is an issue in Columbia, Missouri. So, okay, Erica, they didn't sleep on the street last night. Well, the flip side of that is they are also living eight deep in a two-bedroom apartment because people are now sharing resources in a more unconventional manner. We don't have a handle on all of that. So you have students that are economically in adverse situations that leads to another level of unrest. Then you bring them in and say, oh, yeah, but I want a higher test score out of you.
Right. Well, and teaching the test is obviously nothing people are – a lot of teachers aren't crazy about either. But I guess, Lorenzo, I know – I wanted to maybe get your take on that too, I guess, just trying to have students that have these challenges at home trying to fit into a system that may or may not be designed for them.
Well, and like Erica said, what home? Yeah. Majority of these students that we're talking about, these different stats make up, they are homeless. They do. They stay with friends. They couch surf. And, you know, how difficult is it to go home and do homework when you're environment that you're staying in is a party environment with music and TVs blaring and the nine yard. We got a lot of students that come to our organization just to study, to get on the computer and do their work, and we make it available to them because it is an environment where they can do that. As Erica said, we got to be more creative in how we do teach some of these kids. Some of these kids can do very well with just an online course. We're doing a lot of that at the Youth Empowerment Zone is allowing them to study and even pursue their GED online. I think the state, we've been talking to the state about that, and they're more conducive to that. A lot of these students, as Erica said, are very bright. If you can see how they are surviving, you can see that they are very intelligent.
Right.
Because it takes a lot of intelligence to be able to survive the way they're surviving. And most part, if you meet them, you wouldn't even have a clue of the things that they're going through.
Mm-hmm.
They still mindful, they are still respectful, and they are intelligent. They can carry on a conversation without giving you a clue that last night I went hungry. I need somewhere to wash my clothes. Stuff like that. Minor stuff that most parents wouldn't even have a clue that these kids are going through.
Mm-hmm.
The lack of parent support. A lot of them don't have, their parents is nowhere in their life. They're either locked up or, and maybe both parents are incarcerated. So they're staying with aunts, uncles, friends, so forth, so on. So to answer that question, it's very difficult, but I have such a huge respect for those that are trying. I had one young lady that was sleeping in a car, but yet still, she was making a B average at Hickman High School, and the principals did not even, the school system didn't know because she had set it up, her mailing address. She had went through all of that where the school system didn't have a clue that this child was homeless.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I wonder, too, you guys have kind of both been alluding to the fact, like you said, students are smart that you're coming at Douglas. There's been a lot of research trying to tie dropout rates to much earlier education, early childhood education, or even like at the sixth grade level, they'll say that's a very key point when you talk about the achievement gap and things like that. How much of an issue do you think that is in Columbia, some of that earlier education too? Or is it really some of this more anecdotal, situational stuff that they're dealing with as, you know, really young adults, teenagers? Is it a little bit of both? Or it sounds like you're saying, especially with the program you're working with, and I mean, you mainly are dealing with on a daily basis, both of you, you know, teenagers.
I think early
right?
childhood is huge.
Yeah.
If you look at if you break down the stats that African-American male child, a huge percentage of them start kindergarten behind. And usually the stats shows that most of the time they never catch up, and which kind of leads to that dropout rate too. So to answer that question, I believe it's a huge issue. In fact, the organization that I model my organization after of is called the Harlem Chilling Zone. And that was one of the things, one of the components that they placed in their organization, and they put a lot of resources in it because they realized that if we can catch them at an early age and get them engaged and keep them up, even advance, then the likelihood of them not dropping out and finishing and going to college is much greater. So that is one of the components that we are looking at the Youth Empowerment Zone is begin to work with mothers that are even prenatal to begin to start training them and looking at getting these children educated and be at least up to the educational level to enter into kindergarten on the average or above.
Okay. And Erica, you have any thoughts on that?
Early childhood is a piece of it. Mm-hmm. Education is a piece of it. But we are nested in a culture. We have economics. We still have to go home at the end of the day. So it's got to be a more systemic approach. I think one of the things Bishop talked about the Harlem Children's Zone is they identify a geographical state, which was Harlem. They did it block by block, and they wrapped political, economic, health, and educational services around a group, and they grew out holistically. What happens is, even with funding, let's talk about funding from the state level, they don't cut education, but they cut mental health. We still have to go back and absorb students that are underserved that have serious mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So someone's got to go back in and do
that. That was number 7 on the list. That's the one I didn't get to, was mental illness.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Huge.
So how do you go back in and look at, and I think that's one of the things when you start looking at United Way. United Way is trying to go back in and help organizations that are nonprofit, that are educational, that are from birth all the way up until whatever their goals are in some way, shape, form, or fashion, communicate better so we can make sure we're coordinating a wraparound service type of deal. So early childhood is important, but what is more important is that we've wrapped around from birth until to make sure that the supports are where they need to be when they need to be. Erica, don't you love early childhood education? Who would I be to say, oh, infants? Oh, no, never. But I have a daycare back, an early childhood program back in my school. But the flip side of that is I still got my gap. I still have to deal with their mothers that were 14, 15, and 16 when they had their children.
Right. So. Well, we're going to take a short break here. I'm going to remind our listeners that this is Intersection, a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. Today we're talking about graduation rates in Columbia and what's being done to help students who are at risk of dropping out. Joining me in studio are Erica Neville, the principal at Douglas High School, and Lorenzo Lawson, executive director of the Youth Empowerment Zone, which works with at-risk youth as they make the transition into adulthood. I'm Ryan Femuelner, and we'll be back right after a short break.
This episode of Intersection is a rebroadcast. The program originally aired on April 15th, 2013.
Welcome back to Intersection. This is a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Femuehlner. Estimates place Columbia's public school dropout rate at about 3% in 2011, close to the state's average. Nationally, the U.S. Department of Education places the dropout rate at around 3.4% in the school year ending in 2010. So what's being done to reduce these numbers? Today on Intersection, we're exploring some of the reasons that students drop out of high school and finding out what's being done in our community to change that. Joining me in studio today are Erica Neville. She's the principal of Douglas High School. She's held that position since 2011. And Lorenzo Lawson is the executive director of the Youth Empowerment Zone. That group works with at-risk youth and helps the transition into adulthood. For you in our audience, have you ever considered dropping out of high school? If so, why? Share your thoughts. Give us a call at 573-882-8925 or email intersection@kbia.org. You can also tweet us at intersectkbia or join our online chat. And I wanted to bring in, we actually have a caller on the line now. His name is Eric. He's here in Columbia. Eric, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, Eric. Thanks for calling. Go ahead if you have a question.
Yeah, I had a question for Dr. Neville. I'm an education student at Mizzou right now, and I'm actually going to be starting a master's program in the fall. And when I graduate, I would love to start working with real high-need students, at-risk populations. I really would like to get involved with that and do what I can to help. What can potential educators like myself do to better prepare ourselves for accessing these populations, engaging these students?
One of the things that when I was a professor at MU, did you get your education degree, your undergraduate at MU?
Yes, I'm actually graduating in May with it.
Okay, who did you take TDP 2040 with?
Denny Barksdale, actually. I know that you normally taught that section, but I had the one section that year that wasn't yours.
Okay. Once again, our field experience was based out of working with, it's been a minute. We did community service. So we went back in and we supported nonprofits that were working with youth because I knew that most of those nonprofits that were working with youth were working with our high needs kids. Mm-hmm. So we had students down in Fun City, the Intersection, What Was Moving Ahead, and various places to go back and get that viewpoint of our kids. The other thing that I told people to do is to go back in and do something they've never done before. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah, the out-of-box experience.
Yes, because what happens with our students that are so high needs is that most adults, especially if we're middle class and up, we don't have to deal with them. We get mm-hmm. to drive real fast and go past institutions and parks and housing that does not belong to us, and we never get to sit and hear the story. So a lot of the work that I do, and I know that Lorenzo does, and anybody that's really going to work with high at-risk students is hearing the story so that we can figure out what needs to meet, because our students aren't necessarily given the chance to go back in and talk and engage in a manner that we consider socially acceptable. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. So get in as many spots and places as possible to up your comfort zone. I've gotten to the point in my office where nothing scares me. There is no judgment. It is what it is. And let's just work with what we got so we can go back in and get you to your next space in life.
Great. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And we'll go from that. We actually have another call. Carol from Columbia. Carol, you're on the line?
Yes, I am.
Okay, Carol. Thanks for calling.
Well, thank you very much. And this is a very interesting program, and I want to compliment both of your guests today. They obviously are very knowledgeable about the subject. I wanted to just reinforce what they'd said about early childhood education, how tremendously important it is. I was an elementary educator for many years, and I know that when children are read to by their parents or whomever, those that are read to on it frequently can come to school with a vocabulary of about 17,000 words, and children who are not, sometimes it's 7,000 or less. So there's already a big gap by the time they enter kindergarten. We also know, and the research is very clear, that if students can exit grade 3 reading on grade level, their chances of being dropouts are practically nil. So I would like to say that if we could get adequate resources for our underserved populations and the schools in which they attend, maybe Erica and Lorenzo wouldn't have to be dealing with the dropout problems and some of the challenges that they have now.
Literacy is a huge part of our problem, or part of the issue, or part of the solution. And being able to go back in and read across content and curricular areas is key. And we're in an interesting age because regardless of race, creed, color, economics, cute and ugly alike, we tweet, we Facebook, we Instagram. So I think as a society, because of technology, our ability to access text is being compromised across the board. And that is, and the effects of that are even more so with those kids that don't get to interact with student or families or adults with that other communication, that oral communication piece. So I think that is critical. And how do we go back in and bridge that gap? I got some ideas. If you're a retired educator, we're at 301 North Providence. Come on down. I'm serious. I'd love to see you. I'd love to talk to you.
From me.
Also, we know that it's very important. In fact, I'm the vice president of the Minority Men Network, and one of the projects that we have taken on is every Wednesday, the men is reading to a preschool organization called Norb Stewart, which is primarily African-American kids. We go down and read to them for an hour because we have seen the data that it does make a tremendous difference when we're reading books. So we have taken on that project. And we're looking for other opportunities to do more like that. And at the Youth Empowerment Zone, that is one of the projects that I'm trying to get our young students involved in, is being able to read to some of these preschool organizations.
You know, to go along with that, the other piece of that pie is actually getting text in the hands of everybody. I had a classroom library in my house. I had a library in my house that's bigger than a lot of people's classroom libraries. I'm a bookaholic. I met a man by the name of Mike McGuffey this summer when I was down at a conference. He does Literacy for All, and he has I need to reconnect with him this summer, as a matter of fact, but he has a way to go back in and produce low-cost text that can be actually put in the hands of families and children that they can access and that they can keep. Because the other piece of that pie is not just going out to get the books, but to have access to print that is relevant and desirable for various students in their own homes.
All right, Carol, thank you very much for calling. Thanks for joining the conversation.
You're most welcome.
Okay. And Lorenzo, we haven't really talked. We talked a little bit about what you guys do at Youth Empowerment Zone, but I guess getting back to, we talked about early childhood education there, but getting back to the student that's coming to you and they're a teenager and they're about to become an adult sometime soon and they're dealing with some of these issues, maybe about to drop out. What are some of the programs? What services are they getting at Youth Empowerment Zone? What do you guys offer in there, and what's the usual day look like for you guys?
Well, like Dr. Neville alluded to, one of the biggest issues that we deal with our youth is economical issues. That's the biggest need in their lives, is somehow coming up with a means of earning wages. So our first and our primary project is that we teach them job readiness training, and then we give them life skills that normally they don't receive in their household. For instance, when we started the Youth Empowerment Zone, we were able to get them jobs, but 82% of them weren't able to keep their job for 30 days. And we went back and we looked at why. And one of the biggest issues was anger management and a lack of conflict resolution skills. These kids usually operate on what we call the survival mode, fight or flight. So whenever an issue rises, that's what they do. They resort to one of the two. And most likely in a job situation, it is take this job and shove it. I was looking for it when I got this one. And they got these little catchy phrases. And they do not think about the ramification of what they're doing. Mm-hmm. And then they back at our place saying, I need to pay this bill. And they have a lot of things that society made them to believe that without these things, then you are nothing. You are a bum or a nerd or whatever, whatever the derogatory term. For instance, a cell phone. That's the first thing they do. So we teach them, and we go out in the community, and it's not a welfare program. We let them know that what we're going to do is give you the resources that most kids have, and you're going to have to sell yourself. Mm-hmm. Bottom line, you got to get the job. And that's what they do. We teach them how to go to the and do a proper interview, how to dress, how to look a person in his eye, how to do their resume, and they get a job. Well, we asked the employer that if you do decide to hire them, will you allow us to come in and train one of your seasoned employees as a mentor? Because it's been proven that if that young at-risk person have someone to turn to talk to befriend, then before they are just quit the job, they are going to talk to that person and convey to them the problem that they're having. And that have raised their retention rate. Of course, we re-engage. One of our biggest premises is education. We realized, in our opinion, education is not the step out of poverty, but the escalator out of poverty, and higher education. So we push that in some form. We know all of them is not going to go to the academic school of higher education, but vocation. And now we got a component of our program that is the entrepreneur piece. We know that with the economy, we're not able to get all these kids jobs. So let's start thinking about creating jobs. Mm-hmm. So we're implementing the entrepreneur piece. And that's pretty much what we do. We work with any other organization. One of the issues is, like we said, lack of housing. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at creative ways of finding some type of housing for these kids, because most of them that come through our door are homeless, and they are, you can't count them as homeless because you don't know they're homeless. Mm-hmm. They're staying with friends and stuff like that. And basic needs, as she alluded to, the hierarchy of Maslow, hierarchy of needs. You got to take care of those basic needs first: clothing, shelter, food to eat. Yeah, and right. And so we partner. In fact, I just came from the food bank. That's one of our biggest partners. They allow us. We got a kitchenette. We make sure that we keep something for them to eat when they come to our training. Most of them come hungry, and it's hard for them to concentrate when they're hungry. And we know that. So we try to address those needs first. And once we address those needs, one of the things that we have seen is that let them know that we care. And that's a huge piece of them being able to receive some of our positive criticism and giving them direction in which way to go.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, a lot of work and a lot of different people with different challenges that you're trying to help, right? And so sure. I guess, and I want to get both your thoughts, Eric, and maybe a little bit from you on what, you know, like you said, there's a lot of organizations that have risen in the last few years to try to help these students, but what's still missing? What certain students with certain challenges still don't have someone to help them out? Who's still falling through the cracks?
The flight or fight mechanism, the survival mode that students, children, and we have kids. We're not just talking about students and families that are from Columbia. We have an interesting pattern of people coming from Chicago, coming from Memphis, coming from Milwaukee, other larger urban areas that knew that they had fight or flight, took it to another level. So you're working with those. I can tell you how we organized at Douglas and how we're spiraling out. We started out, we have a very strong academic core program, teachers that know how to teach. We have smaller class sizes, so we're working to help bridge the academic gaps that may have been created by those 10 reasons sitting on your piece of paper.
Mm-hmm.
We have the VA program that is a longstanding satellite program. It's a collaboration that students go to school part-time at the VA using online instruction, and then they work at various jobs within the VA program. which is also branching out and mentoring kids and looking at are there placements or mentorship programs that they can also look at for employment after graduation. We work with the Missouri Option Program, which is for students that are older students that will not graduate with their cohort class, that have taken certain courses. We have three course requirements, that work part-time, that can also take the GED. And once they pass the GED, then we matriculate them like a high school graduate. One of our graduates last year, for instance, a couple of them are over at Columbia College now after they finished this program. Traditional high school just wasn't going to go back and do for them. We work with, and I have a passion for those kids that have not connected. So we are still working with students that are have low high school credits, number of credits that they've accumulated, and maybe have an IEP or other impediments to graduation. So we're working on developing programs to go back and work with those students also. So once we got our core academics settled, then we're looking out, what are the gaps? So mental health, thanks to United Way and funding through United Way, in addition to our counselors on staff, we are also having, we have a direct pipeline to get students mental health services through the generosity of United Way. The mentoring and the adult piece that goes along that way, we are working with MU and a program we just started, BESD, Building Educational Strivers at Douglas. And the Rotarians have been critical with this, working with our partners in it, bringing in their skill set to say, you know, this is the part that you all need to know. And here's some more adults and some more wisdom to go back in and talk with. Mm-hmm. Looking at the early parents, we reopened our child care center. There was one time I looked around and I had two infants on my lap and I was trying to send an email. These were students that had children that didn't have access to child care because infant mm-hmm. care is $200 a week.
Right.
Okay. So going back in, I know that first we are a school, but in order to get the educational pieces down, how do we go back and garner those support pieces so that our students can concentrate on school as best as they can and get them focused to help them? Because the other thing was board.
Right, board was on there.
Like yep. number four or five.
Yep.
And that our classes help them to connect with what the real world is looking like. And hopefully also between the mentorship and the other things that we're doing with our community partners shows that this educational piece, this boring, or this high school piece has a direct connection. If communication is your deal, then maybe you need to come sit down at KBIA for a minute and at the intersection program and see what happens with community TV and mm-hmm. Community access piece. Mm-hmm. Or we have Rotarians now that have taken kids on campus. They thought something with the whole, not food service, but the whole food, how do you get food, is a thing. So connecting their interests, connecting our academics to that post-secondary piece so that our students can figure out, oh, this makes sense because mm-hmm. it connects there. So yep. those are some of the ways that we're kind of going back and organizing and figuring out how we can wrap the rest of those services around those
sure.
kids.
I want to take one more moment to remind our listeners and viewers that this is a program of KBIA and the Reynolds Journalism Institute. I'm Ryan Famuliner, and this is Intersection. Today, we're talking about graduation rates in Columbia and what's being done to help students who are at risk of dropping out. Joining me in studio are Erica Neville, the principal at Douglas High School, and Lorenzo Lawson, executive director of the Youth Empowerment Zone, which works with at-risk youth as they make the transition into adulthood. And for you and our audience, do you think there's a cultural gap in our schools? We'd love to hear what you think. Share your thoughts by giving us a call at 573-882-8955.
This episode of Intersection is a rebroadcast. Our phone lines are now closed.
And you guys have both talked about that a little bit, that question mm-hmm. I just threw out to our listeners. But I'd like to maybe hear a little bit more on your thoughts on a cultural gap between what students that are at-risk populations might need versus what they get in a traditional school setting. And you've already talked a little bit about what you're trying to do differently at Douglas, but mm-hmm. maybe some thoughts on that from you guys.
Well, you know, and like I said, I applaud what Erica, Dr. Neville, and they're doing down to Douglas. That is, like I said, it hadn't been the rule. This is totally new stuff since she's been on board. And I know this to be because when I moved back in 2000, nothing like that exists. And again, I give credit to Dr. Belcher for even allowing this to happen, because mm-hmm. before the administration, they wouldn't even consider it. They didn't meet with us. We try to set up a meeting so that we can get some of this, these type of programs going, these type of partnership, because we do realize that it's going to take the entire community, all facet of the community, to work together. Even the police department, we working with them. You know, I'm one of the founders of the Silence the Violence movement, in which, we're finding out that a lot of the kids that's committing those violent crime have dropped out of school. Mm-hmm. So there's a correlation there. So what do we supposed to do? The question of the cultural gap, I mean, it's more than just a racial cultural. It's, in my opinion, and Erica may allude on this also, it's that cultural of the hip-hop culture. I mean, that is something that I'm constantly got to learn about and keep up with, to just to be able to communicate with these young people. I'm asking them questions. They got their own language. I mean, as she said, you know, for instance, they write in what I call text language, but also they talk in text language. And these are some things that I haven't even wrapped my mind around. How are we going to get our kids to get back to formal English?
Yeah, and that's not going to go well at school, right? I mean, a teacher's not going to react well to that.
When you write a paper in text language,
you're not going to get an A. I can finish that one.
Right.
So, and we tried to convey that to them. And the amazing part about it is a lot of these kids think that that's normal. You know, why can't I? I mean, you know, this is where we communicate, you know, and they thinking that the system should change, not them. So,
right. So
that's the issue.
And you show intersections, how appropriate. You have less than 10% of teacher educators being people of color. And I do believe, was it last year, 2011 maybe, that half of all live births in America were children of color. Mm-hmm. So you do have a huge ethnic and racial shift taking mm-hmm. place in America right now. You have, I do believe, free and reduced lunch. That's the way we measure class or economics in schools. I do believe that rate has gone 15% in the last 4 to 5 years. And I used to know the numbers when I wasn't in public and lost it since I've come in.
Right.
So we've seen a jump in those that are, who their economic resources are down, versus those that are teachers that are middle class and whatever, when you look at where the median income levels are in America. So then you go back, you have the technology gap.
Mm-hmm.
That we were given computers in an educational setting, and a lot of us think of them in terms of education. You got kids with computers more powerful on their telephone, and they do what they please with them. There are a lot of different ways that we need to go back and rethink how we bring our that intersectionality together, because there are a lot of cultural gaps. We got an age gap between the teachers and the students that is accelerated by popular culture. We're talking we live two totally different ways.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of gaps there.
And is the answer different teachers, or is there training available for those teachers as well to try to get them up to speed, or what's maybe it's a little bit of both, but what do you think works best, or what needs to happen?
And this is the thing that's nebulous, that intersection piece. I love having Rotarians, which is one end of a lot of spectrums, in with my kids, which is totally different places on the spectrum. And I think one of the things that came to light was one of the conversations that they were having with a group of our kids, and they said, oh, you all don't have real problems, you're teenagers. And one of my students responded, I slept in my car last week. And there was a conversation and a learning point for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. We don't get to that story. We don't get to the real issues and the grit until we get to the place where we share space to rethink how do we translate this. Because we still have to go back and admit powers that be do business one way. And we need access. So how do we go back in and start helping with that transition and that translation?
and that economic divide, as she was alluding to. Here's a person that come from a middle class background, don't have a clue that, because in their mind they look at their own kids and they're teenagers, so they don't have a problem because I'm paying for everything. I got a college fund, all of that. They haven't a clue that this young person
is doing their FAFSA by themselves.
Exactly. Or sleeping in a car, or trying to figure out where I'm going to eat at, what I'm going to eat this afternoon. And not including that many, as she said, you know, already got started a family at 15, 14 years old. And in their minds, how, you know, you never even think about that.
Mm-hmm. But what I'm also hearing, too, is that that instance there might be good for the community, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that might, you actually, it sounds like that might be a challenge,
everybody.
But it might actually be a good thing, right?
I think one of the things, Silence the Violence, came out of us losing two people under the age of 19 to gun violence last year. And one of the things that struck me was one of the students, the first one that was killed was DeAndre Johnson. And he was one of mine, killed right across the street on Providence. And I came on campus a week later and I'm still distraught. And some of my peers, I was mentioning, oh yeah, one of my students was killed, and they were like, "Huh? It what happened in Columbia?" I'm like, "I know you had to drive past the spot that we have flowers every day, mm-hmm. and yet that is so far from your existence. You can't go back and start to address what we need to get done in the 21st century until you figure out a way to understand that there are multiple spaces and stories out there."
We have about 1 minute left in the show, and we have a caller, Kent from Columbia, who I wanted to bring in for the last minute here. Kent, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Kent. Yeah, unfortunately, we'll have about a minute left, but I wanted to take your call. Thanks for calling.
It's no problem. Yeah, I when I was young, I dropped out of school. You know, I ran away from home and was homeless and all that kind of stuff when I was growing up. And I didn't have any of these kind of programs when I was young. And I got to say, you know, my life probably would have been a lot different if I had. And, you know, it's really a great thing that you guys are out there doing. But, you know, also at the same time, there is a lot of hope because there is a lot of these kind of programs out there that can really benefit people in that situation.
Thank you, Kent.
Yeah, thank you very much for calling, Kent. And I guess that's probably...
Thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Has to be encouraging for you guys to hear that.
Oh, sure. Gosh, yes.
Sure.
Gives me hope.
Okay. Well, on that note, that's it for today's intersection. Today's our guests were Erica Neville, the principal at Douglas High School, and Lorenzo Lawson, executive director of the Youth Empowerment Zone. We'd like to remind those of you enjoying this that, as a rebroadcast, that intersection takes place live for a full hour from 2 to 3 every Monday afternoon. You can watch live streaming video of our program each Monday afternoon online at kbia.org. Alongside that video, you can submit your questions and comments and participate in an online discussion with others in the audience. You'll also find an archive of all of our past programs, including the full hour of today's conversation. Intersection is a broadcast from the Reynolds Journalism Institute and is a project of RJI and KBIA. Intersection is produced by Katie Moritz, Raymond Tungakar, Janet Saidi, Ruben Stern, and Benita Rizvik. Travis McMillan is our technical director with production assistance from Eric Stazak. Pat Akers is our audio producer. Executive directors are Mike Dunn and Mike McKean. I'm Ryan Muellner. Thanks for joining us today and have a great week.
The episode of Intersection that you just heard was a rebroadcast. The program originally aired on April 15th, 2013.